What you are about to hear is the story of a connection that was made between a television series and a viewer's life. Our television set sits in the corner of our living room, befriending us, educating us, inspiring us, making us laugh or cry or tear our hair out in frustration. It is a far more constant companion than most of the friends we will ever make, or even our family. The You and Who books are the story of that companionship, that connection, as told by the people who watch the programmes that make us come alive, chiefly, of course, Doctor Who. This podcast will relate some of those stories. You're listening to You and Who Talking, and I'm J.R. Southall, the creator and chief editor of the series.
G'day listeners, it's Rob here. I'm on my own this week. JR is having a well-earned rest because, well, he's old. Just kidding. JR and I kind of bollocksed up our record times this week and we'll be recording a whole bunch of new episodes next week. But for this week, rather than not do a show, he said, Rob, why don't you fly solo for a change? And I said, yeah, why not? So here I am, and I am absolutely delighted to be here, sitting alone in the studio to present another essay written and read by Al Noh. Now, you may have heard Al Noh on an earlier episode of the show. I hope you have, because he has a lovely turn of phrase. He writes in a way where sometimes you're not quite sure what he's talking about, but by the end you do, and then if you rewind and listen to the essay again, you'll know where he's heading, you'll know what he's actually talking about, and you start to pick up on all the clues and the things he was saying in the text, and it's really quite enjoyable and listenable multiple times because of that. I like that in all the stuff he does. And I'm particularly delighted to be presenting an Al Noh essay at this time because he's just released two books. Yes, two books, not just one, two books on the same day. If you go over to seabadgerpress.wordpress.com, that's seabadgerpress.wordpress.com, you'll see he's released a book called Everything's Connected and None of This Means Anything, which is described as Doctor Who, comics, popular culture, life, language, magic, philosophy, childhood, what it means to be human, dense, exciting, moving, funny, and almost certainly not what you expect. And you can buy that through the website there or get it straight from Amazon if that's your preferred poison. And he's also released This, That, and the Other, described as a first, last, and for always collection of layered, erudite, strange, and frequently hilarious Doctor Who reviews from the No Complications blog. So if you ever read the No Complications blog, you'll know exactly what to expect there. If you never did, this is a great way to get all that text off the blog in a lovely book format. So both of those books by Al have just come out. They're highly recommended by myself. And yeah, look, without any further ado, here's Al's essay. I won't tell you what the subject is, and the title probably won't give it away either. You'll just have to listen and slowly figure out what he's talking about, and you might have been there, you might not have been there, you might have heard about it, you might not have heard about it, and it'll be an adventure, and I'm sure you'll be rewinding and listening to it again. Here's Al.
Silt and Synesthesia, written and read by Al Noh. It all started in the weird limbo that stretched between my birthday and Christmas, pretty close to the stomach lurch-inducing hump of Halloween. Outside, the trees were trying to make coal. Inside, I had a unique relic. I knew it was special because it said first, twice on the stripe on the bottom right of the cover. I still wasn't sure about this tubing logo, but it would probably grow on me. The fact it was shiny certainly didn't hurt. It was woodpecker red, looked like boiled sweets taste, and if you got the angle right, you could just about see your face in it. I'd read the book twice by now. It would have been better with pictures. I was, mostly, living at the top of a house at the top of a hill that ran down to an estuary that spent half the day relentlessly smashing rocks into silt, and the other half being stared at by pensioners waiting for the master to finally get it right. I'd spent most of the weekday doing tedious things that interfered with my reading, like eating, sleeping, going to school, and being laughed at for looking like that boy genius off Doctor Who. Could have been worse. At least I was rubbish at maths. Every other weekend I'd go on a journey, which would take about 100 years, to a different country, and read Doctor Who magazine. The latest issue had something stunning and exciting that still affects me to this day. The wonderful junkyard demon with exquisite Mike McMahon art that had obviously been splashed straight from the bottle onto the page. I didn't bother reading the articles about all the old stories, but the pictures were nice. It seemed a bit strange that I'd just been reading the novelisation of one of the stories, but I didn't make any connections. Not then. 100 years later, give or take, I was back in school and something had changed. Rather than being asked where my badge was, I was being teased about a miracle. Naturally, I kept my head down and tried to ignore the rumours that were filling the classroom like the smell of 2000 AD and powder paints during a wet play. It was obviously nonsense dreamed up by someone who'd heard about Piltdown Man that morning and thought, that sounded like a fun career move. I knew it was a cruel hoax because you could only travel forward in time. This was easy to prove because we had the hell of school trips to museums and I wasn't riding a dinosaur to school. When something was gone, it was gone forever. As a result of this, I absolutely wasn't trembling when I got home and flicked through the Radio Times to check the listings, not even slightly. And there it was. They'd been telling the truth. How had I missed this? Why hadn't there been some sort of promotion? Would it have hurt to have run a trailer or mention it somewhere or something? In the millennia since that Monday evening, I've had the same wading through treacle feeling waiting for post, phone calls and emails. I try and fill the time by pacing these days. It's still impossible to concentrate, so I may as well get some exercise. In the past, there's a moment where I'm sitting in an exhibition centre with the sun watching the sequel to Carnival of Monsters, and another where I'm still sitting on a chair in the kitchen, vibrating gently with anticipation and staring, gimlet-eyed, at the hands of a clock, proving once and for all that telekinesis doesn't work by failing to make them move faster. Every so often I get up and turn the tiny black-and-white television on to make sure it's still working. It is. And although I grow old and turn to dust over and over again, eventually, the screen blanks. There's a hiss, a wobble, and it's worked. It's actually worked. This is 1963. This is how it starts. We perceive things with a greater purity when we're children. If you leave a comic on the back seat of the car, then the sun will bleach it. Time does the same thing to our perceptions. Daily repetition removes all colour and wonder. Language changes slowly and we can't understand things the way we once did because they're buried under an archaic linguistic dust. Everything's in colour on a black and white television. Back then, on that Monday evening in 1963 and 1981, I watched something that I had no real right to. Things never came back. Although we'd moan about repeats, it was only because they weren't the repeats we wanted to watch. As a result, these stories splashed through the public consciousness once or twice, then sunk slowly through the fathoms of shared experience, until eventually, inexorably, they settled into the sediment of memory. Over the years, the soft parts faded, and the hard parts were replaced by myth. They became fossils. They became legends. Watching these moving photographs through the steamed-up window of time travel, I don't remember being actually excited by the initial appearances. The police box, Barbara, Ian, the unearthly child, the TARDIS, and the old magician himself all arrived as they always had. I took it for granted. After all, how else could it have been done? This was how it had always been, and this was the one chance I would ever get to experience it. Even then, it was slightly diluted. The first flight of the TARDIS didn't seem to be the end of the episode as I imagine it would have on first broadcast. When the Halloran worm began its slink up the screen, I knew where we were going. I knew who was casting the shadow that stretched across the landscape. I seem to remember that everyone in my class had taken the ride. A lot more than had dutifully trooped through the autumnal woolly misery of Logopolis and all the maths homework that came with it. And for once, I belonged. Finally, looking like an Alzarian was a badge of honour, rather than an excuse to flick my admittedly huge ears. The experiment continued. The following Monday, we tried landing in 1968. This time, the magician was a benevolent penguin, accompanied by the lovely, lovely, lovely Jamie and Zoe. I did my job as a viewer and filled in the gaps between a dream of Gons and what made it to the screen. The Crotons didn't seem like an odd choice to me. I didn't know what was going on behind the curtain and I didn't really care. In Monday 1973, I accepted that the magician I'd grown up with was the same folk hero I saw talking to chickens, just with a different face. And again on Monday 1972, when during an anniversary collision, I saw one magician disguising himself as three. The resulting Blinovich limitation effect caused a record number of tornadoes to sweep the country. It came full circle for me and the rest of the guinea pigs in December. This time we only short-hopped back a few months. I was a year younger, but not everyone could say the same. This is where it became apparent that we'd all been fooled. This wasn't a science experiment at all. This was a magic trick. We hadn't really been travelling in time. we've been doing something much more incredible. As the weeks had gone on, we'd watched a myth and a memory come to life through a television show. There was nothing up the voluminous velvet sleeves. The hat was just a hat, and all that business with the skulls in the first 3 weeks was misdirection. The magician had been totally straight with us. All that homework in Legopolis was for a reason after all. It might have appeared to a cynical eye that all those weeks making Doctor Who a regular appointment that felt like a rite. These were the repeats we were looking for. Was a skillful publicity exercise leading to the relaunch of the show with a new actor. That was the misdirection. All through it, we were being trained to the core of our beings to accept that this was a single story about a single hero. We believed that there could be five faces of Doctor Who. And because of that, he became immortal. That's for Steph.
You've been listening to You and Who Talking, presented by Rob Irwin with J.R. Southall. The You and Who books, from which all royalties are paid to charity, are available in print and for Kindle from watchingbooks.weebly.com.